Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routine to call the scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It's a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hear ye, hear ye. King Chavez the Terrible. All rise for King Chavez the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.
Constant sorrow all through his days. I am a man of constant sorrow. I've seen trouble all my days. I bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised, the place where he pleasure here on earth I found. For in this world I'm bound to ramble, I have no friends to help me now.
He has no friends to help him now.
Never expect to see you again. For I'm bound to ride that northern railroad. Perhaps I'll die upon this train.
Perhaps he'll die upon this train.
Sleeping in my grave,
while he is sleeping in his grave.
Maybe your friends think I'm just a stranger. My face you never will see no on God's golden shore.
He'll meet you on God's golden shore.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest East is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. Grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those windmill boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. Came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, it's old King Shaziz the Terrible. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table, and apparently some of the other knights have slept in today or something. I hit the snooze button a few times myself. Anyway, I wanted to bring up a topic. Excuse me. I wanted to bring up a topic that you know, some folks think about. Don't want to go all prepper on everybody out there, but there's something to be said for being prepared for potential hazards. And my friend Stephen Gibbons, he put a deal out there in the chat room. He said he likes banana skins and loose rocks and ice and etc. And I told him, I said, I'm with you, brother. In the world of slapstick, those are the best. Ain't nothing like slipping on a banana peel, that's for sure. Or a sheet of ice, for that matter. Anyway, down to earth kind of thing, you know, it's the simple that you usually overlook before you ever get to the point wherever you need something. Maybe something as simple as a flashlight, you know. It's no good to have a flashlight if you ain't got no batteries, and it ain't no good to have batteries if you ain't got a flashlight. So, if you got a talking Bubba doll out there, you got a flashlight, because that's all he ever says. That little doll drove me nuts. He's like, I got a flashlight. If you notice I got a flashlight, turn my flashlight on. Anyway, if you got a talking Bubba doll, you got the flashlight covered. He's holding on to it for you. But there's other things out there that could be taken in consideration that are pretty inexpensive that might be worthy of putting back, you know. Extra band-aids or some rubbing alcohol or some hydrogen peroxide or, you know, any kind of medical supplies, that kind of stuff like that. And, you know, kind of thinking on the lines of if you was able to bunker down in your house for worst case scenario, you know, bad storm or, you know, any kind of weather, adverse weather where you couldn't really get out and do much or whatever. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, where you actually had to up and leave the house. You know, I've had a what they call a bug-out bag sitting in my room forever and a day in case I had to get up and go somewhere in a hurry. That I could grab this bag, and inside this bag, it has a lot of stuff in there that you would just take for granted that you normally would have. And it's, you know, like small tools, little saws and pocket knives and flashlights and batteries and a compass and just about everything that you could think about, little useful tools, you know, little fire starter kind of things. And it's just something that if in worst case scenario and you had to get up and you had to go leave away from your house or something, maybe some sort of natural disaster was going on and you had to head for higher ground or whatever, that you could just grab that bag and at least you'd have something. And also something that a lot of people don't think about, that to put inside this bug out bag would be something to be a resemblance of home. You know, if you're in a situation such as that, it could be kind of stressful, you know. And if you have something that kind of resembles your life, your home, or whatever, something a little sentimental that you just throw in there to kind of, you know, ease the burden or whatever. Crazy as it may sound, I got a little Daffy Duck doll that my daughter gave me quite some time back, and a couple little photos and stuff like that in there. You know, it's just something that if you was stuck somewhere for any given time out and away from your home or wasn't able to go back, that you'd have something there just to kind of give you that little feel of home. And, you know, psychologically, it could make a difference as far as what in tarnation is that noise? Anyway. So, you know, I just, I thought about all the people out there. In the last probably couple months, I've been watching a lot of science fiction shows out there that had to deal with apocalyptic scenarios, you know, ice storms, mega ice storms, basically ice ages, and giant hurricanes and tornadoes. And there's even one out there called Sharknado that's, I guess, got the sharks sucked up in a tornado and they're flying around eating people and that kind of stuff. Yeah, there are some pretty wild ones out there. But there's things about earthquakes and super volcanoes and all that. And you're watching all these shows and you're seeing how people react in those kind of scenarios, and some people, they turn into some pretty rotten individuals whenever they're in fear for their life or, you know, hungry or whatever. And so, I think about if in reality something to, maybe not to that extreme magnitude was to go on, how would the average Joe fare? You know, a long time ago when I first started hearing about all this prepper community stuff, I was thinking, you know, if I had to make it from point A to point B with just what's in my pocket, how would I fare? That's why I pulled out my things out of my pocket. I pulled out my keys and my wallet and my comb, and that was it. That's all I had on me. I didn't have no kind of tools, no kind of pliers, a little pocket knife or anything like that. And so, you know, it'd be like if I'm out in the middle of nowhere and I need a little pocket knife, I ain't got nothing, you know. And so I started looking around and I started getting up little things like multi-tools or, you know, like a Swiss Army knife that has a spoon and a fork and stuff on there. Things that you would normally take for granted that you'd have in your house that you wouldn't have if you had to, you know, be out and about. The best case scenario is that you'd be able to stay home and, you know, have your little food supply on the shelves and stuff like that, and some medical supplies, because if the stores were down and you weren't able to get there or you couldn't get fuel for your vehicle to go nowhere, then, you know, you'd have something. And if you have any kind of medical condition, you kind of store up a little extra of your medicine so that you'd have that in a worst case scenario. And then you always have to factor in that there's other people out there, such as your family members, that aren't as mobile as you. You know, what would you do in that instance? You know, there's a lot to contemplate on. You know, I'm not a doomsdayer by any means, but I do believe in being, prepared for, you know, it doesn't even have to be a financial collapse. You could have some sort of financial hardship in your own life that you could use, a little bit of cushion. You know, if you had a month's supply of food in your house, and at least that would buy you a month to try to get something worked out, you know, get some sort of income coming in or something. So, I'm hoping that... I got another comment. A comb. Do you surprise me? So, yeah, that's funny. yeah, mad science, Harry. He's like, wait, what do you carry a comb for, man? that's hilarious. Hey, if you ain't got the hair, how could you be a mad science? That's a science. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Look at Einstein, you know, and all the mad scientists on the doggone shows on TV or whatever. They all got wild hair. And the guy from Back to the Future, he had a nice hair on him. I like that hair. Like that Einstein look. Anyway, and that's if you don't want to comb your hair, you can just say, hey, look, I'm a mad science guy or gal. Okay, we need to get some mad science gals with some wild hair. Anyway, back to the show there. I think that there are a lot of things that are usually overlooked that would be beneficial for just such an emergency. Yesterday I went to a auction and I kind of had a pretty good day down there. Me and my wife was out. We picked up a few things, and believe it or not, I bought me a 3,500 watt gasoline generator for $15. And, you know, I only bought it for parts because I was going to go ahead and buy it under the assumption that it would be, probably not working. So I'm going to drag Thomas Anderson in here if I can. So anyway, I bought that generator. That's a knock. I'm going to turn that ringing down. Do-do-do-do. I bought that generator and under the intentions that if... looks like we got Thomas. How you doing there, brother? We're live.
Hey.
Anyway, I bought that generator for $15 because at the worst case scenario, if the motor was bad in it, the generator head itself was worth more than that. So, you know, it was in hopes that, I'd buy this thing, I'd get it home, and it would actually work. And sure enough, we put some gas in that thing when I got home, and it fired right up. So I got a really good 3,500-watt generator for $15. And then also...
You got a decent generator for peanuts? Is that what you said?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. It... you know, it surprised me. Like I said, I only bought it for parts because my assumption was you buy it at an auction and it could be very well the case you get it home and something's wrong with it.
Right.
But, so the generator head in itself is worth way more than $15. Anyway, I also found a brand new little mini generator, two-cycle motor in there for $55. It hadn't even been out of the box yet. Never touched or used it or anything at all. I got that one for $55. And to my surprise, I bought this other little jump-starting deal. I don't know if you've ever seen them. They're for, you charge them up, and if you need to jump-start your car, you can go over there and use the little battery cables to jump-start it. Well, I usually buy those for, like, emergency battery backups. And so, I get this thing, and I got it for $5. And I go to pick this thing up whenever I was going to take it on the car. This thing was heavier than heck. I was like, what the heck is going on here? Well, it turns out, after inspecting it a little bit, this thing had a built-in 400-watt AC inverter in it. And so I not only got the power pack, but it's an inverter. It's an inverter plus an air compressor, plus it's got a flashlight thing in there, and a couple other nifty little gizmos on there. But I was pretty surprised about that. That's, you know, $5. Just the parts alone inside that would be the $5. But I had a pretty good day. Bought a few things like that, and I even accidentally bought a couple of skids of things that I only paid $2 for them. But I got some really nice light tables. Yeah, a whole big box full of those giant skid. A skid full of them.
Light tables.
Yeah, they're, you know, like you use for drawing. Actually, these were like for doctors, x-rays. You put your x-ray on there so you can see what.
Yeah, I was going to say, how big are they?
They're pretty good. Some of them's about the size of like a little, you know, those little tables that you use, tea tables that you use for your dinner or whatever.
You talking about card tables, like
little tables like dinner trays or something like that.
Yeah, talk about those. You basically just use them for like microwaved food or something while you're watching TV, and then you fold it up and put it away.
Yeah, these other ones are probably about anywhere from 4 feet long and a foot and a half wide or whatever. They're pretty substantial. And on top of that, I ended up with another complete skid of mirrors. And so me and my buddy's going to make a solar foundry with those mirrors. I mean, I got more
mirrors.
Yeah, they're pretty good size. I got a bunch of them. I got a whole skid load of them. And I got them all for $2. Both skids I got for $1 a piece. It took a trailer to move them.
So you paid more than you paid for them in the cost of moving them.
Well, luckily, my friend's got a good trailer, so it didn't cost me to move them. I just gave him a few of the mirrors that he wanted, and, you know, we kind of do that. We share things. Anyway, between him and I, if the apocalypse ever come around, we got enough stuff to build enough stuff. But the whole key of this show is to pretty much put some ideas out there in people's heads how they could just kind of prepare just for whatever, you know. I'm not talking about going all out prepper and doing all this kind of stuff, but to be just you know, kind of ready for just about anything that could potentially happen. Things you would normally take for granted that you'd have, you know. Something as simple as a doggone pair of fingernail clippers could be something that you know, if you got them, you got them. If you don't, you just don't. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, so I was talking about, you know, I built a little bug out bag, is I guess what the preppers would call it, but it's essentially got little micro tools in there, you know, like jeweler's files and pocket knives and flashlights and batteries and a little book on first aid and, you know, thermal blankets, stuff like that. Things that you can buy in the camping sections that are micro-sized, where you can fit a whole lot into one small bag. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because your average person can't carry more than a backpack, I mean, for very far. But, you know, you'd also have to factor in if you did have some some elderly people that you would have to get mobile or whatever. Like I said, the best case scenario is that you can just stay in place, no problem. But you never know. Just here's the key. Everyone needs to get them a notebook and take a day or so to go around and inventory what you got. And actually look at your local environment. What kind of hazards would you be at a potential risk for? Are you in a flood-prone zone or a tornado alley or earthquake or whatever? And have you some sort of plan? You know, do a little bit of research. And there's some folks out there. There's an actual website called eattheweeds.com. And believe it or not, you know, there's a lot of things I didn't know that you could do with dandelions. You know, then some of which have some health benefits, and you know, dandelion greens don't sound all that kind of tasty or anything, but hey, as opposed to nothing at all, you know, if you know what is in your local environment that is safe to eat before it anything happens,
before you need it,
yeah. Like mushrooms, you know how many different mushrooms are out there? And I have no idea which ones are the safe. All I know is that my friend, he goes out and collects morel mushrooms, and he showed me pretty much what they look like. But, you know, it's just a little simple things like that people normally overlook. And so if everyone out there listening was to get them a... And do this with your family, not just with your family, but for your family, for just such an emergency. Because one thing that stood true in all of these apocalyptic movies that I've watched is, first off, the government never tells the people out there what's going on. If there's something major happening outside of when it's like right in your face and it's like, okay, yeah, well, they obviously know there's a tornado out here, so we better say something. But they don't necessarily come out and let you know that there's some sort of doomsday deal. They don't want to panic you or whatever. But the second thing is, you're on your own. You know, your neighbors aren't concerned about your family. They're concerned about their family, you know. And so they're going to do whatever they can to take care of their family. Now, if you got good neighbors, then you're probably taking care of each other. That would be the best go, you know. And so that's why we've said many times, and Thomas has said about networking. You know, get out there and know your families and your neighbors and stuff like that around there, and talk with them and tell them, you know, hey, look, I got carpenter skills, and if you know anything was ever happened, you know, I could patch a few things up or like that. And you know, and I see you got some mechanical skills, and so maybe if you could help us keep the generators running, I can help keep the roof on the house and such. You see what I'm saying, Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much, you know, the best thing that you can do. If you get that notebook, go around your house and write down, you know, what kind of stuff you got on hand. You know, canned goods or medical supplies, and then just kind of sit down and calculate, you know, just kind of figure out, well, if, let's just say the power went off for 30 days, what would I be able to do? You know, the first thing you know have to know is that there's going to be a lot of perishables in your house that, you know, like whatever you got in your freezer. You have to figure out a way to maintain that freezer so that you can keep whatever in there frozen.
Mm-hmm.
There are communities out there, such as the Amish community, that they know about refrigeration of, you know, going way back to where they, you know, had the ice houses and stuff like that. And, you know, there are methods of which to actually make ice. But you got to know these things before it ever even comes about. And, of course, that's going
to
be...
Actually, you need to know, and you need, if it's something you're going to have to... do afterwards, you should be doing it beforehand as a practice.
Yeah.
Learn how to work with it when you don't have to. That way the pressure's not on. Because when the pressure's on, any little mistake could basically cause a serious problem. That's when the mistakes are going to happen.
Yeah. And, you know, the government's out there, they got this huge jade helm drill, which to me, it aggravates the heck out of me, but... the main reason for that is that they've got huge military bases. They don't really need to come into the general public and do all that kind of stuff. But either way, the government's got a drill. They're preparing and practicing for such an emergency, whether it be perceived or not perceived, or maybe they even know something, but they're preparing. So the people out there should be having their own drill. You know, the people drill. You used to do fire drills in your schools whenever you was a kid or something like that. Or, you know, if you got a father who's cared about you at your home, you actually run fire drills at your house, knowing where all the exits are and, you know, flashlight batteries and such. So, you know, kind of run a drill and look at your environment around you and say, what potential hazards do I have to worry about in this particular environment? And, you know, one of the things you wouldn't think about normally would be that, you know, if you fell down and you broke your arm or your leg or something like that. And now it's just, okay, I get on, I call 911, the doctor, or they come and get me, take me to the doctor, and I get fixed up and all that kind of stuff. But if the system was having a big problem, you couldn't necessarily get on the phone and call 911. You're at your own mercy.
And yeah, there may not be even a phone service available at that point.
Yeah. And so it would be prudent to be prepared that somebody knows something about first aid, you know, because some fractures could
before be... Before you need it.
Yeah, before you need it. That's the key right there. We've got to emphasize that. But it'd be prudent for somebody to know beforehand, so that if worst case scenario comes down, you know, because there are some injuries that would literally be life threatening. You know, like normally a broken leg ain't gonna be life threatening, but there are certain compound fractures and such that you know, those could really be a serious deal right out of the gate. Now, I'm hoping like nothing ever happens or anything like that, but I was thinking that, you know, of all the times we've been talking about, you know, possible future events or stuff like that, I just wonder how many of the average listeners out there are actually prepared for anything, for that matter, you know? What do you got in your pocket that you could survive from one point to the next? You know, that's the key. So, take your notebooks, write down a list of what you got in your house and your medical supplies, potential hazards in your local environment, wherever you live, or whatever geography you're on, you know, whether you're in the mountains or the deserts or stuff like that, and think about what would it be like if you know, something happened. What would you do in such an emergency? Like, if you're living in a desert, it's blatantly obvious you're probably going to need a larger water supply than the average Joe. So how would you get ready for something like that? Or, you know, if you live somewhere where there's super cold climate, you know, do you have enough firewood that would last you at the very least 30 days until next time, you know, things get better or whatever? And then, you know, there is always the off chance that things might not never get better. And do you have a saw that you could use that doesn't take any fuel, you know? Back in the old days, that's how they did it, with an axe and a saw. One of them big old two-handle things. Thomas, could you see you and I with one of those trying to cut down a tree? Man, we'd be fixing and figuring out some way to get electricity and an electric motor to turn that handsaw into a reciprocating saw or something.
Chainsaw.
Yeah, chainsaw.
Chainsaw, wrong. I'll be fat.
Yeah. Sometimes it's better to use your brain than your back, as far as I'm concerned. Because I've seen those people work those saws, and man, that's like a heck of a workout. You know, when you get to be about my age, you know, I'm only 49, getting ready to turn 50. But
you're in the Benny Hill theme whenever you say that.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. That'd be the song that they'd be playing while we're cutting it.
I mean, you know which video I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You walk off camera and go get a chainsaw and just say the heck with it. Too old for this.
Yeah, I just think that this is this is a really important subject that we really kind of need to address and help everybody out, kind of get some sort of plan going. And so, you know, if you're out there listening or if you're in the chat room and you need some sort of, you know, something, you figured out a solution for whatever that it is you might need. Stephen Gibbons in the chat room threw in making preserves, jams, dehydration, and pickling are good to know when freezing is not available. Yeah, there you go. That's good. Those solar dehydrators, you know, they don't take no electricity if you build this little things right there. And so you can dehydrate some of your you know, vegetables. Actually, you can dehydrate a lot, can't you? And preserve it with salts or something like that. You know how that process works?
Some of it.
Well, either way, that's will be some good YouTube things to look out there. Yeah, that's one thing fascinating about YouTube. If you want to know how to do it, get on YouTube. If ain't nobody out there doing it, chances are you don't need to either. Or if you know how, then do it. Then that, then you got the cornered the market on it. But you know, things like that, dried foods, that's pretty amazing because you can carry a lot of dried food in a backpack. You know, maybe you got one of your kids is hauling the food that's dried out, and one of your other kids is hauling the water, what they can carry, and you're carrying the tools and supplies, the heavy stuff, and you
or
know,
just carrying something, you're headed somewhere where you know there's water at. That,
yeah.
You just bring, they're carrying the filtration equipment, you know.
Well, you hit on another key source there, Thomas. There's another thing to write down on your list is knowing your local water sources. Do you know of any wells that your neighbors might have that they'd be willing to let you use in worst-case scenario? Or, you know, even ponds, streams, and stuff like that. And they've got some really good water filtration systems these days. And then also there's the fact that you can actually build an on-site water filtration system. Yep. You know, there's ways that, you know, you burn the wood down to, you know, don't burn it into ash, but burn it down into charcoal. And that's a start in using sands and rocks and, you know, basically build you what a system kind of like what nature already does. What do you think, Thomas?
Sounds like a plan, so.
Yeah, so out there, you know, in the real world where the skeeters and all the bugs and stuff like that are, you know, you don't think about a lot of things whenever you're home and you can just reach over and flip the light switch on. But if you're out there in the real world, you know, there's a show out there called Naked and Afraid. That's jacked up. You would never put me naked in a swamp with a bunch of skeeters and leeches and, and gators and all that kind of stuff. I don't know what the heck those people were thinking.
It was money.
Yeah, must have been a lot of money, man, because that's got to be torment. I don't know what is on the other side. Is it, what do they give them, 50 grand or something like that, if they can survive the full 7 days or whatever it is they stay out there?
I don't know. I haven't watched it, so.
Well, I come across it one day and kind of watched it. You know, of course, they blur out everything. That's good. And we'll see a bunch of naked, muddy people out in the swamp anyway, but I was taking the whole time I seen this dang show. I was like, man, what in tarnation were these people thinking? I mean, first off, you have to know that mosquitoes in the swamp are probably pretty hefty, you know. Like an old farm boy out there in the field, you know. He's been baling hay all his life. He's got to be tough. Well, the skeeters in the swamp, you know, they got to be tough too. You know, I like dang skeeter going to carry you off in the middle of the night or something like that, or a snake creeping up on your waiting.
I was going to say, kind of like mosquitoes you find in areas where they have refineries.
Oh, my Lord, did you see the doggone bees, the African, I don't know if they think they were African, these huge, this guy had like four of them in his hand, and they've stretched from the palm of his hand all the way over to where his thumb was. He had four of them in there, these big, huge hornets, man. A wasp or something like that. And I was like, doggone, man, I'm about to get me one of them industrial strength electric fly zappers, you know. Put some super caps on that thing to turn that thing into dust. And he had a stinger on him about the size of a pencil. Could you imagine that thing chasing you around?
actually, we heard a Japanese hornet overhead before seeing it while it was flying in up in Pennsylvania, and not sure why it was even up there. Probably came in on some produce or something, who knows.
Oh my God, you tell me they're over here in the States?
Yeah, they sounds like a helicopter going overhead.
Dude, I'm telling you one thing for sure. If I ever see one of those on my property, I'm going out and getting me one of them semi-automatic shotguns and some buckshot or something, man. Because one of them giant bees starts chasing me around before he stabs that pencil in my booty, I'm going to pop him one.
My concern would be if there's, you know, one, and it's, you know, not something that's a complete anomaly that it got there. That means there's going to be a nest up in somewhere.
Oh my God, dude!
You seen that old 50s movie? It's either 50s or 60s called Them, right?
No, but I did see one that, about bees or killer bees or something like that.
Yeah, no, those are like regular sized bees. If you're talking about the one I'm thinking of, I think you're talking about. I'm talking about the old. Black and white, the one about the ants that are basically so big that the people were able to crawl down into the ant hive.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't see that one.
They're like, you know, bigger than a car.
That would freak me out, man.
So.
And I seen one with giant spiders in there. Hopefully we never have to come down to that kind of deal.
And some people would be totally worthless in a situation like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I saw a giant spider, you know, I used to like be severe arachnophobia until I moved out to the country and I had to deal with them continuously on a daily basis. And, you know, they're out here in the country, you know, spiders and snakes or whatever. But as long as they stay on their side, they don't get the boot, you know. But if they get too close and for comfort or whatever, you know, he becomes tarantula mush or whatever. But now, if those bees, if there was a nest of those size bees over there, shoot.
Be time to move.
Yeah. Well, first off.
Yeah, place, I'm leaving.
First off, if you had some of that old chain mill that they used to use back in the medieval days underneath their armor, I don't know that that would even be long enough or tough enough to.
Be thick enough.
Yeah. Because
their stingers are too small to be blocked by that.
Yeah, so that, you know,
like being stuck by a Rondell dagger with all kinds of poison in it, you know.
Now, I'll tell you one thing for sure though, man. I'd figure out some sort of plan because I'm gonna get them before they get me. You know, I'll make me an army tank out of an old 50-gallon drum or something like that with a shotgun turret inside.
Yeah, I don't think they're strong enough to puncture steel or anything like that, but there's openings. They're thin enough. I'm sure they can probably go through them.
Okay, now picture old King Shaziz the Terrible with a couple stovepipe deals for, you know, the legs, and then I got a 50-gallon drum for to protect the body, and so you got this 50-gallon drum with stovepipe legs and a shotgun hanging out the center of the deal, heading for this bee's nest. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But, you know, these kind of things like that and these disasters in these movies, they don't, a lot of the times, people don't even have any warning that they're coming. They're just on you, you know. That's usually when bad things happen, is the worst possible time that it could possibly happen.
That's why they say, the old saying is, when it rains, it pours.
Yeah. And it's been raining a lot. I see Texas is getting a little bit of flooding going on, and it's been raining here for, it seems like a week now. You know, it has a couple breaks in and out or whatever, but by the way, it's pretty sloppy around here. You can't get a lot of stuff done.
You say, does it sound like a Louisiana bayou out there?
Yeah. I stand
that's, doing, that's what it's doing here. I opened up the window, and it was just like, I don't know, it's just, you know, incredibly loud, all these frogs and whatnot making noise out there. It's like, never heard it do that here before.
I was standing
4 years out, that I've been here, I've never heard it like that.
I was standing out in the field, and I could hear this little crackling noise, right? And I was like, where in the heck is that coming from? And so, was walking around trying to figure out where this crackling noise was coming from, and I stood still long enough to understand that it was water running under the grass, and every time I would make a step, that it would have this little, you know, crackling noise of the water running through there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that tells me that ground is pretty sloppy. You know? Oh, here's this. It's crazy, deadly Asian hornets, 4 times the size of wasp. I'll put that link into, it's on Dabu77's channel. I'll put that link into the chat room over there to Wake Radio and Shaziz Radio so you can see the bees that I'm talking about. Because, dude, if you've been chased by a swarm of those, I don't think jumping in the pond and staying under there long enough's going to help.
They probably have a little more memory, too.
Yeah, they'd probably be sitting up there...
Hey, you're that guy.
...waiting for you.
Yeah.
But...
We remember you.
Yeah, it'd probably be like one of those...
No, you don't. That was my brother. Why heck?
You're like one of them grudge movies where the shark, you know, you made the shark mad and he's coming back to get you. Or that Orca the Killer Whale one. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was something else. But, you know, who knows? Zombie apocalypse doesn't necessarily have to be like real zombies out the grave. Could be some folks that are just out of their mind with bath salts or something, you know.
They
some sort of,
sick, you know.
Yeah, and they could just be sick and they're going to come after you. Thanks. Or whatever. You know, it's not saying all this stuff to try to scare people. It's just kind of, if you ain't prepared for something, you know.
Well, that's just it. If you say this stuff and it scares somebody, then they haven't prepared.
Yeah.
You say this and they're not scared, then that means that they've taken the time to prepare, or they don't really understand it, what you're trying to tell them.
Can you see inside the chat room there, Thomas?
No, I don't have access to a
okay. Well, I'll just send the link over for your later use, and you can look at these bees, man. I'll tell you what, they something else. If I was to see one, just one, I'd be combing the neighborhood trying to find that nest with my 50-gallon drum suit of armor and stovepipe arms. And everybody see it? It looked like a homemade junkie robot walking around with a shotgun poking out of it.
it's the hillbilly Robbie the Robot.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, these are things people need to be aware of. There are hazards out there, you know, bee's nest that, there's like some serious ants out there in Florida. Have you ever seen those ants in Florida?
No, but I've seen some down in Texas.
Well,
pretty big.
I don't know if they're about the same as the ones in Florida, but the ones in Florida, they're not like the ones over in Africa as size-wise, but they're red ants that are about the size of a carpenter ant. And these things, when they bite you, will literally leave a, looks like a pimple on your arm.
Mm.
I fell into a nest of one of those one time when I was out roofing. I was monkeying around, I dropped on the ground and fell into a nest. And, man, those things tore me up. And it was like instantaneous. Those little whelps just pop right up. I sure hate to have some of those things get rowdy on me. But yeah, there's all kinds of things out there. Let's see what else we got in the chat room. Stephen Gibbons said, lavender and wild garlic make good natural bug repellents. There's a good deal right there. Oh, yeah, and on the subject of bug repellents, I mentioned the neodymium magnets. I seen a lone ant got in the center of those neodymium magnets, so that's a no-go.
A lone ant, though, that might be an anomaly. If it gets rid of most of them, I mean, nothing's foolproof.
So well, that's all I saw was one.
Yeah, keep testing.
Yeah, I'll keep running the test and see that if it works, but that's the only one I saw. And maybe he just didn't, he's the exception to the rule, like you said.
Yeah.
Anyway, folks, get your notepad out and go around your house and take inventory on things you got. And also this, and this could sound kind of disgusting, but it in reality it's not. There are water sources in your house, including your toilet. You know, your dog would lick out of your toilet, but that's the worst case scenario, that you're going to have to drink out of your toilet.
Right. you don't have to drink out of the bowl either.
Yeah, the tank. So think ahead of time before you put those little blue pellets in the back of your tank, the nifty flusher things that supposedly clean your toilet or whatever.
Hey, they make those ones that hang down in the bowl.
Yeah.
You don't have to put one inside the tank where your reserve of water's at, and then end up having that gum up the works on the way through before when the water's on the way into the bowl, too.
Yeah. So I think there's, what, like a couple gallons in the back of that toilet?
Yeah, it depends on the type of tank. Some of them have less than others because they're water savers.
Yeah, some of them eco-friendly...
have no water hanging around so that whenever things go bad, you'll have some extra.
Yeah. Anyway, your hot water heater itself has, depending on what size, you know, anywhere from 15 gallon on up, you know. And so
there's a lever down there on the bottom of it that you can open up, and usually it's for pressure relief and whatnot. But if you need to, you can use it to drain that to get drinking water out of there or something if you have to.
Yeah.
So depending on what kind of shape that's in, that might not be the best water to drink. But if it's that or dying of thirst, then, you know, I guess you go ahead and drink the chemicals and whatnot that are inside that tank.
Under other circumstances, if you have a basement that has been prone to flooding because of your foundation issues or whatever like that, and you have to keep a sump pump running down there, then you got all the water you'll ever need. Most generally, you know, even though you think the basement probably be the worst part to get water out of, that sump down there, you got to remember where that water is coming from. It's being filtered through the ground. Now, am I saying that it's safe to drink right out of the deal? No, I wouldn't drink any water out of any source without at least boiling it or whatever. However, you know, if you had that kind of situation, you know, fresh water is at your disposal if you need it, you know. So I would look into water filtration and boiling water. Normal pressure steam cookers, you know, you can actually use those to purify water. What do you think, Thomas?
Well, it'll get rid of biological contaminants, but it won't get rid of the chemical contaminants that usually come from the biological organisms. So, and, you know, all kinds of other sources. So you definitely want to look into getting some good water filtration equipment.
Yeah, that would be a definite plus. And they actually have portable drinking straws that you can actually get too.
Life straw.
Life straw, yeah. That's one.
Everybody in the family should have one.
I need to find a link to that and post that on the Life Straw. Post that on the chat somewhere. I would be a proponent for people buying those kind of things if they can get them. Mm-hmm. And Stephen Gibbons, he's busy in the chat room today. He said, Asian bees have a defense against these. They all pile on top of the hornet, beat their wings to raise the temperature, effectively cook the hornets as the bees can bear higher temperatures, and the European bees don't have to have this so much work. I'm terrible at reading stuff. Impact on bees' colonies than humans' attacks, which are rare. So that's one thing they were saying also about those big giant bees, is they was running around and killing other bees.
Right.
You know. But, shoot, that bee looks like a doggone hummingbird. Something like that. And, you know, either way, know what kind of bugs are around your doggone house and what kind of hazards are in your local general vicinity, and try to be aware and plan for those. But on your list, so we talked about putting some sort of water source, and we've talked about putting some sort of medical supplies and something about food. You know, when you get your list all together, sit down and try to factor out, calculate up how many days would you have that you could survive in your own house or out in the woods for that matter. You know, because you never can tell what's going to happen in this world that we live in today. I mean, the government's out there doing all kinds of crazy stuff, and you can see by all the news and alternative media out there that the world is pretty much in an uproar. And Like I said, with every apocalyptic video that I saw, all the possible doomsday scenarios, the government's planning for the government. They ain't planning for you. They don't, you know, it's going to be you. It's going to be we, the people, that's going to be basically left on to our own devices. Matter of fact, yeah, yesterday one of the videos I saw said that. It was every man for himself. The military was bugging out. And it says every man for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And every man for himself means every woman and child for themselves, too.
Yep.
So, know your neighbors and know your family's needs and try to have something, anything. I think where I'm at, I'm kind of trying to provide a sanctuary for just such an emergency that, you know, people need a place to go. You know, I've got 12 acres of land.
That's where you need to start calculating what your limit is, though, so you don't oversaturate yourself and then everybody ends up going without.
Yeah, I don't got a huge billboard out there and saying, hey, come over here, but I did tell everybody.
I'm just saying, I know it's going to be hard to have to do, but you're probably going to have to, in a bad situation like that, you're probably going to turn some people away, and you got to know what your limit is, how many you can help before you have to start turning people away.
You know? That would be a choice I don't know that I could make, Thomas, because I just, you know, I would try to have to save everybody. You know, that's one of the things that really bothered me a lot about some of these apocalyptic movies was that turning away thing. You know, that people, when they were trying to do for their own family, would drive off and leave other people in need. And I'm like, man, that would be a terrible decision to have to know that something was coming. And those folks, chances are, probably were not going to be able to get out of the way.
Right.
You know, and you know, that would be something that would break my heart if I had to leave somebody behind. I couldn't take that.
I say it's reminding me of that whole thing about how to survive a bear attack. You don't have to be faster than the bear. You just have to be faster than the slowest member in your party.
Oh, that's funny because it reminds me of what my wife said one time. She said that if we fell down in a pit full of alligators or monsters or whatever, she said she'd climb over the top of me and leave me behind in the dust. And she says, I'm sorry, I love you, but I ain't getting ate by no crocodile. You're gonna take care of that for me. So you're gonna sacrifice me to get away. I said, man, I hope there ain't no apocalypse, because if it is, I'm screwed. We sat around and talked about stuff like that every now and then. She said if there was like any kind of like zombies chasing us or whatever, she would mow me down to get away. Throw me in front of the monster or whatever. She said, well, you're the man, you're supposed to defend the woman, right? And I said, well, don't mean you got to sacrifice.
Wait a minute, where's that feminism thing?
Yeah, what happened to that? And then there was also, we started talking about, you know, some of these other weird shows where the people would like start eating each other. And I'm like, man, that ain't no way in heck. And I said, you wouldn't do that, would you? And of course, she was obviously joking. I know she would. She said, I don't know, man, you don't need both of those legs, you know. I was like, are you crazy? There ain't no way I'm going into an apocalyptic scenario with you. See, I'm leaving
that's,
you behind.
That's kind of another thing that you just touched on right there. Choose your partners, you know.
Yeah.
Going into this with, whenever you go looking around and talk to your neighbors, find out what kind of people they are and, you know, see if you can't make some partnerships before, you know, you don't have a choice. You know?
Yeah, that's the thing too, man, because even if you got a neighbor that looks and seems to be really super nice, and you get to know in that neighbor, and you can know their quirks, you know, the things that set them off.
Their weaknesses, that's the most important thing. What is it that basically caused them to turn on you? What's that one thing that they just don't have control over?
Yeah.
That controls them, you know. Is it girls? Cars? You know?
Food seems to be the biggest key, you know, to a lot of people, you know. And in all these apocalyptic scenes, they were killing each other over water, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a...
If you've ever really been thirsty, then you'll know why they were doing that, though. You know? You just have to have been thirsty one time. Really thirsty. Like, you know, delirious. You can, you know, feel your body shutting down. The endorphins are kicking in because the water level has dropped so low that your brain is actually sagging on the stem and banging against the inside of your skull, you know?
Well, and you got to understand that, too. It might not be something that they mean to do, you know? It could be they're just completely out of their doggone mind.
Yeah, they're not killing and eating you. They're killing and eating that giant hot dog they thought they saw.
Yeah. Well, see, I tell you what, if the apocalypse comes around and people start trying to eat people, I mean, that's, first off, that's nasty as all get out. But second is that I'd probably be the last to go because I'm skinny as a rail, and so I'm going to go try to find somebody who's a little bit more, you know, got a little bit more meat on their bones. It's funny, I was laying out on the lawn chair one day and these doggone buzzards started flying overhead and I was like, get out of here, I ain't dead, you know. I don't think they were looking for me, but it just was ironic, you know, because I'm skinny and they're trying to crack on me or something. But in the zombie apocalypse where they want brains, I would seriously be in danger there. Okay, because I got a lot of brains. Anyway, you know, it's all funny right now because we're not living it. But, you know, there are situations out there. Look what went on over there in Katrina or something like that. The last thing that I would want to do is go towards any population of people.
Yeah, you know. Actually, that's going to be the issue, too, is that for a while, it's going to be dangerous near the population centers because of the people screaming away from it.
Yeah.
At some point, though, because of that very mentality you just mentioned, it'll probably end up being the safest place to be because it'll be completely evacuated.
Yeah.
So...
And, you know, in all these videos, they always had rogue gangs that were running around robbing each other, you know, that kind of
stuff.
On
motorcycles.
Yeah.
They always have to be on motorcycles.
Yeah, where are they getting their fuel, man?
Yeah.
So
they did just release that new Mad Max movie.
I haven't got an opportunity to see that one yet.
Yeah, Fury Road.
But, you know, these are things that you should want to think about. Normal things like normal table salt. Who thinks about saving table salt? When we would go into the store, every once in a while, it's only like about 79 cents for a little container of table salt, you know. And I kept buying it. And my wife was like, "Well, we got more table salt than we'll ever use." But you'd be surprised under certain circumstances if you couldn't get it. Then that could be a bartering chip, you know.
Yeah.
You could trade some table salt for some vegetables or something to your neighbors, you know. Not everybody thinks about everything to save, you know, bags of sugar or something like that, you know.
Or they just run out.
Yeah.
You have to have more, so you got a surplus. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Surplus
to get things that you do need from, you know, other people.
If money ain't no good anymore, you'd need something to barter with. And bartering with gold or silver is really not going to get you very much unless somebody just likes shiny stuff because they can't eat it. So, you know, if you got some sort of supplies. Now, here's another thing that I saw in one of these movies which really, really bothered me bad. There was a movie where there was a heck of a thing went on and the entire United States was in a jam and there was people living up on the hill and there were people living down at the bottom of the hill who, when everything was calm, were good friends. Well, a couple military guys came by and they pretty much took over the deal and started being like brutal dictators in these two people's families and, you know, basically found out that another person had supplies. Well, first off, the one lady come up there and she said, "We're trying to collect up used leftover medicines, you know, for people in case they need them." And he told them that he didn't have nothing, but what he did, he had prepared, and he did have a bunch of stuff. Now, for me, that would have been hard, really super hard for me to tell somebody I don't have something, knowing that I do have something. You know what I'm saying? But what turned out to be a really nice neighbor, she came up there and told him the second go around, you should have gave them to us when we asked for them first. And this was normally a nice neighbor. This one of his neighbors, you know. And now she's like turned against him because they found out that he had supplies up there.
Right.
And this whole thing turned into a brutal deal to where he was literally loading up all of his supplies and taking them down there and giving them to the other because they threatened, you know, his family's safety. You know, that's... And the things like that, you know, I know that right now in your average society, everybody gets along, you know. Hey, you got a nice, loving neighbor, but if you don't know that neighbor well enough to understand that that neighbor's got either a temper or, you know, like I said, the weak spot that, you know, when it comes down to food, they'll literally turn on you like a mad dog and do whatever. And, you know, it's something to think about.
Well, I believe it is. There's like a whole saying about there's, you know, what, three meals and 24 hours away from between that separates civilization and complete anarchy.
Yep. Yeah, but here's the perfect scenario. The perfect scenario is that while the government's out there running their drills, that the people get together and run their own drills. You know, you get together with your neighbors and you say, okay, well, the government's going to go out there and run drills in case we get attacked. Well, okay, let's let them do what they're going to do and let us run our drill of what we would do in such an emergency that our own government would, like, just basically leave us hanging, you know, on the side there, out to dry or whatever. So get together with your neighbors and say, okay, you know, let's talk hypothetically. Hypothetically, we had this really bad storm come through here, and it just pretty much wiped out everything. Do we have enough people with enough knowledge that could go through and salvage through the wreckage to, you know, shelter and clothe everybody out here, you know? Because you could do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a community, you could come together and build little shanty shacks if you had to. You know, just something to get by until you got everything resolved. And if you knew about different ways to refrigerate and things, you could actually save things after this, you know, this storm came through and wiped out. There are things within that mess that could be salvaged. I mean, you could literally salvage nails if you needed to. And so imagine a scenario that happened and everything, the infrastructure was just totally smashed out of its gourd, but you already had in place a community group that knew, you had guys that knew about electricity, you had guys, gals that knew about medicine and food or whatever, and you guys, when the thing happened, everybody just goes directly to work. They just, instead of panicking, instead of fighting over stuff, they start gathering up things and start helping each other out. You know, there ain't no need for a National Guard to come rolling in unless you call them in and say, hey, you know, we need some water and some medicine over here when you get around to it. There's no rush right now. We're doing fine. You know, you see what I'm saying? Some sort of taking control of a bad event and making it a calm event kind of thing. What do you think? You still there?
Yeah, it's all down to whether people will actually do it or not.
Well, what's the alternative? The alternative is you can always trust your government. They wouldn't hang you out to dry. In that one where the whole world was flooding, they had a situation where they had arcs, and they had a lottery where you put your name in the lottery, and if you win, you get to ride on the ark, and you get to survive, and the rest of your family and friends all day that are out there to the flood. You know?
Hmm.
If you were a good government, your plan would be not just to save the one or the two or 50,000 or whatever. Your plan would be try to save as many people as you could possibly save. Such as this. Do you know there is a company out there that makes these life pods? And they're for flood zones where you literally get inside this little, basically like a giant bobber, and it's got medicines inside there and food or, you know, basically in case of you live in a flood zone, if you can get to it in time, you'll just float up to the top and just bob around in the ocean until, you know, help comes or something like that. It's kind of like the blow-up life rafts that are on ships, you know. They got flares and radios and stuff in there. And there's, you know, storm shelters for people that live in Tornado Alley. If you had it situated to where whatever potential hazard was in your general vicinity, you could build you literally a life pod that would either float up to the top or stay underground for the you know, duration of the storm or whatever. We have all the technology to do all this. It's not beyond the realms of possibility to make your entire house be the life pod. You know what I mean? For the most part, though.
That's what I was thinking, you know, make your house out of the lightest hard material you can use for the skin and use foams for the interior.
Yeah.
And you're going to end up with something that's extremely resistant to heat and cold changes, too.
Yeah,
and just hook it up so it's, you know, it's just sitting flat on the ground and, you know, attached with a tether so it doesn't, you know, float away. But it'll still, you know, lift up and, you know, not end up basically being carried off. I mean, it won't be covered over. You know, it'll float up to the top. So
yeah, and if you study aerodynamics and you know, different structures, like, you know, we know that arches are strong and stuff mm-hmm. like that. You could build this to withstand some really amazing winds, you know, and mm-hmm. earthquakes, whatever. There's no reason why we couldn't build homes and even vehicles for that matter. You know, a lot of people end up dying in their vehicles because they either sink or whatever.
Right.
And we could build these things nearly indestructible. And to me, to try to save everyone you could possibly say would be the best representation you could get, you know. But in every single one of these apocalyptic videos or stories or doomsday scenarios, the government's only looking out for the government. The government's looking for continuity of government so that whenever the disaster's over, they can still be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind the fact that you're just going to watch 50,000 to 100,000 to a million or more individuals just die.
Millions of people.
How do you do that? Seriously, if you got any kind of heart or soul.
The same people who initiate wars and end up bombing and killing children, that's the kind of people that it takes to basically be able to just not care and let those hundreds of millions of people die.
You know,
they've forgotten, or they're incapable of feeling that one most important thing, and that is that every single person on this planet is related.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
They are your family.
I couldn't do it. I couldn't let all those people go.
I was going to say, if they can't do it with their son, their daughter, their wife, or their mom, or their dad, then they shouldn't be able to do it with anyone else.
Yeah, and that's the key, too, man. A lot of the politicians out there and people that, you know, they end up dodging the draft or whatever like that, if you dodge the draft, then they come get you, man. You'd be setting off in a pokey. But because membership has its privileges, somehow or another, they seem to get by with it. And they seem to run for Congress or the Senate later on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. You know the government ain't going to have your best interest at heart. If they did, then we wouldn't have this situation. We wouldn't be having this talk. But life imitates art. And so in every single one of these doggone scenarios right here, it's always the same thing. The government says nothing and prepares for themselves. The people out there get surprised. They end up turning on each other. And out here is total chaos, but don't worry because the government has military to come in and stomp your head in the ground and make you do what they want you to do. You know, martial law. You know, just the thought of martial law makes me sick to my stomach. And not necessarily because of martial law being all the bad and everything like that, but it seems to me like I don't want to give anybody power over me. You know? To tell me I got to be in my house at a certain time, and if I'm on the street, I could be shot dead on sight, that kind of stuff.
Especially if they're not worried about your survival either.
Yeah. And the way that they treat people?
That'd be like basically having Jeffrey Dahmer as your dad.
Yeah, you might as well just go with the road gang, man. The road gang's going to be the same way, you know, do what we say or we'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
They ain't no different. You know, the government, they just got more cool tools and toys and weapons and stuff, you know, and all these deals, you know, they got M16s pointed at civilians and saying, get back, you know, while they're getting on a ship to save their life, they're telling you and your children to get back. There ain't no room for you. That to me would be something really hard. You know, I would be the one exception from the rule that if I had a seat on the doggone deal, I'd take somebody out of that crowd. The first one I'd get my hands on, I wouldn't even look around to see whether it was man, woman, or child. I would just reach behind me and grab the first hand I can and send them instead of me. That's just the way I am. I couldn't do that. I mean, and I couldn't make a choice between, you know, who gets to go or nothing. I just grabbed the first person that was nearby me and said, go. You know, I know. It just, life to me, it is valuable. My own personal life, I've enjoyed so much out of life that I've got to see a lot. I've led a fruitful life. And, you know, if it was me or somebody else, I'd choose somebody else to go, because, you know, that's just the way I was raised. I just believe that that's the right thing to do, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just get you notepads, write down what you got in your house, go around and look at all the potentials, know where your water supplies could be from, whether it be a creek or a stream or even the ocean for that matter. I know they say you can't drink salt water, but learn how to desalinate. Do you have any ideas on desalination there, Thomas?
I just have to point people to Robert Murray Smith's videos. He's got some really good information on all of that. Making super sand with graphene coating on sand for, you know, cleaning water up and stuff like that. There's a number of things in there for desalination and whatnot too. The most effective way to get all those solids out of water is to boil it and then capture the steam and cool the steam back off and condense it back into liquid. So
one of the old pressure cookers would be good for that.
Well, no, the pressure cooker's not letting the water out.
No, it lets the steam out. You've got a little steam valve up at the top.
Okay, yeah, you just let it go through that valve then and then run it through a hose or something. You basically want to still.
You're
not going to be making alcohol, you're going to be making purified water.
So you can take, whenever you come out of the top of the pressure cooker, anything, you know, like some sort of tubing, and you got to cool it down. So coil that tubing up into even a bucket of cruddy water, because you're not drinking that cruddy water. You're just using it for the cooling purpose to condense the steam back into water. And all the heavy stuff will be left in the bottom of the doggone steam pressure cooker. And even if you had to make a two-stage deal where you didn't feel comfortable with the water the first go, you know, shoot it into another pressure cooker and repeat the cycle again until you come out with the purest water you can get.
What about Pete and Repeat?
Yeah, Pete and Repeat are in a boat and Pete fell out, who'd be left? Fred, he'd be in there because he wasn't stupid enough to fall off the boat. Anyway, that's so we talked about water and we talked about medicine, we talked about food, and flashlights, obviously, if you ain't got no batteries and you don't need a flashlight. However, you know, if you got a flashlight and some solar yard lighting, you could do a little bit of ingenuity and get a little bit of light, charge a battery bank. You can make some homemade batteries. There's all kinds of different ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to get out there on YouTube and study up a few things. Throw them on CD and on your laptops or whatever. That way, if you ever have to have it, you got it, you know. If you carry around an iPod or a phone or something like that, you can store a couple of videos on there, really important ones like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are really nifty solar chargers out there for iPhones and stuff. There's all kinds of... You have opportunities now. It's just when the event actually occurs, what you got in your pocket or what you got on your shelves, that's it. You know?
Yep.
You got that much time. And then if you run out of stuff and you have to venture out into the world, that's where the problem lies. Because in every single apocalyptic story that I saw on the TV, that it was the travel in between point A to point B that people were getting attacked and mugged and robbed and everything, you know?
Yeah.
All the hazards that they came into. And you can't plan for every single event. You know, no matter how hard you try, it's just not going to be possible. But the more people you have in your communities that are planning for such an event, you know, the better you're going to be. And if you can bunker down in your own town, you know, and you all stick together and help feed each other and, you know, take care of each other like you would if things were just as good as they ever were, except for the fact you can't go to the grocery store or the fuel station.
Might be better.
Yeah, you could know how to make fuels out of alcohol or wood gas, you know. A wood gasifier, a lot of people don't even think about that. But burning firewood is your heat. The fuel from that could be running your generators. You know, there are things you need to learn safety-wise for wood gas.
Mm-hmm.
But in hydrogen, you know, hydrogen cells, they can be made a whole lot more efficient. And it just takes a little bit of time to get it all figured out and learn about it. You know, have to know the safety of it, because you go look at my video, Hydrogen Danger, and there's a couple others on there that hydrogen, that stuff is pretty volatile.
Mm-hmm.
And my flashback arrestor didn't work. You can literally watch the flame go down the hose. Yeah, and the first time it happened, it scared the crud out of me.
You killed Major Tom, man. He's still floating around out there in space.
I bet.
That's what they use for rocket fuel and some of those things.
Yeah. But there are other things out there that you normally take for granted. Toothpicks, all right? Things like that. Cotton swabs, cotton balls. You know, things that you could just go to your medicine cabinet and grab right now. And when you run out, head over to the grocery store. You know, Stephen also put in there that salt was used as a currency for a very long time, as with the saying, worth is salt. Yeah, but that's one of the points that can be made out of this whole deal right there, is if you can't go to the bank and you've got extra supplies on hand that you could use to barter with your neighbors and stuff like that, you know, you could keep a society going even after the entire system collapsed. But the thing about it is, most people don't want to prepare, and so you're always going to have those knuckleheads who say stupid stuff like, "Well, I just wait till, you know, everything crashes, and then I'll go take what I want," you know.
Or the other ones are like, "Oh, it'll never happen."
Yeah, the ones that never happen are almost as bad as the ones that say they're going to go ahead and take it.
They can't wait for it to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't wait for the police brutality to happen in their town so they can go get a free TV.
Yeah. That's man, and that, there you go right there. You just hit another key point, is the looting and the pillaging and stuff like that. And there's riots that were going on up there in Missouri there, where they were, you know, mad at the police, and since they were mad at the police, they went around and bashing and stealing from their neighbors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then some people were coming in out of town, they didn't even live there, they was going in there bashing and looting and pillaging. Hey, look, it's a free-for-all, we can get free liquor and TVs and cell phones and such. The last thing you should be doing is terrorizing your own doggone community. If you're going to burn your own community down, there's places down in Kansas City, Missouri, to this very day, from the riots that occurred way down in there, where businesses used to be, that will not come back. And so, if there's a job problem out there, it is the leftover from the riots in the past. if I was a business owner, the very last place that I would want to be, unless I was in like Clinton with the insurance company.
I wouldn't say that the problem is caused by that. I'd just say it's exacerbated by it. So,
well,
they just made it worse. They just made it worse. Whatever was already wrong with the place is now worse.
Yeah, well,
and that means that there's going to be just that many more people online, online posting YouTube videos saying somebody's got to take care of my babies. Somebody's got to feed my babies. It's their responsibility. They got to do this.
Yep.
You know, because you know we all had those kids, not them. You know,
I'm up for the community taking care of one another, but I'm not up for somebody doing, you know, like you said, you know, some folks go out there and they'll have thousands of kids or whatever. Thousands, that's kind of stretching it, but either way, lots of kids and expecting a government to take care of them. Well, my problem is this. It's not that I don't want to help take care of the needy, because I do. It's just the fact that if the government ain't there no more.
I would say I'm not interested in taking care of those who are needy because they made themselves needy on purpose.
Well, even at that, if the government ain't there any longer, such as, let's say, the checks stop flowing tomorrow, all right? For some reason, the economy just flats out, and the government checks don't come in, the stores are all empty, and now you've got that same family freaking out. What do I do? What do I do? You know? That's the thing.
They're not going to be freaking out, what do I do, for long. They're going to be coming for you.
Yeah, they're going to come out to find where the food's at, you know?
Yep.
And man, I'll tell you what, there's nothing that breaks my heart more than people doing stuff like that to each other. I would share anything that I had with anybody, you know? I even told my kids, you know, if you need something so bad that you feel the necessary to steal it, you come to me first, and then if I can, I'll get it for you, all right? Because that's not what we're about. And I would rather give somebody something than have them try to steal it from me. You see what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I'm not into people, you know, starving to death. One of the touchy subjects for me is food, because I was raised in a poor family, and there were things, we eat things that most people don't even have never even heard. Have you ever heard of split pea soup?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we ate a lot of that when I was a kid. We ate a lot of cabbage and biscuits and Kool-Aid, you know. We ate what we could get, and by God, when it was on our plate, we were glad to have it, you know. And I know what it's like to be there. I've been there. And thank the good Lord I'm not there now. There's a comment in the chat room again, Stephen Gibbons. Well, I'll tell you what, he should be one of the honorary knights of the round table. He should be a knight of the round table by now. He should get up in here. A lot of the damage and riots is started by agent provocateurs paid to start violence and looting and turn average Joes against each other. There you go. And that's true. It's that destabilization of nations that you keep hearing about, you know.
It's got a much simpler term than that. It's called divide and conquer.
Yep. And if they can keep you guys fighting against each other, heck, they got it made, man. You can't sell no guns and ammunition if ain't nobody going to war. Now, you might be able to sell a little bit of it to the hunters and people like that, but if you ain't nobody warring, then you can't sell no guns and ammunition. If there ain't nobody sick, you can't sell no medicine. So on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's money to be made out there. There's money to be made in tormenting and enslaving you. The guys at the top are at the top because they don't have a heart. They don't care. They will step on your neck if it saves their own. It's that simple. And that's what you see.
It'll make them a few dollars.
Yep. That's what you see in these apocalyptic movies, that people will do dirty deals just to save their own neck. You know? But if you already knew things like, you know, from eattheweeds.com, if you already knew that there was food around you, and you had food on the shelves, and somebody was coming there to say, look, I'm going to kill you, you don't give me my food, say, hey, you know, brother, you don't got to steal it there, take it with you. Go outside and get you some more food, you know? said, what I got here, I got off this land, you know. You welcome me to go gather yours up or steal mine. Whatever, I'll just go out and get me some more. No biggie.
Careful, then you'll be at gunpoint as they push, gather for them, and they'll leave you chained up in the back with, you know, not even enough to survive on, because they don't want you to survive.
Yeah,
that survive, might be able to fight back one day.
That'd probably be the case.
Slowly starve you to death, you know.
But one of these things for sure is that, you know, if you got somebody with wisdom in your neighborhood, that's somebody you should be protecting. You should be protecting the electrician and the carpenter and the mechanic, because if you ain't got the knowledge in your head, when they're gone, it's gone.
Yep.
So what else you think about?
Well, I mean, collection of knowledge, that's pretty much it right there.
Yep, don't underestimate books.
You don't have to worry. Well, I'm not even talking about books. I'm just talking about knowledge on how to do anything. It doesn't have to come from a book. It can come from somebody teaching how to do it, or it can come from reading up online, or just, you know, figuring something out for yourself, whatever. The point is, if you have something that you can do to solve a problem, should that problem arise, then, you know, where's the harm in storing more information in your head?
Yeah.
You gonna run out of room up there?
You know, in the old days, back during the Depression and stuff like that, people couldn't necessarily afford to go out and buy new clothes, and so they learned how to sew and stuff like that, and a lot of people went around with patches on their knees or their pants or the shirt or whatever, and they learned to make do with what they had. And nowadays, you know, somebody gets a ripped pair of pants, of course some of them's in what's the word I'm looking for? Kids like them.
Yeah.
Used
to be they went to the thrift store and picked up pants with holes in the knees and whatnot for, 50 cents.
Yeah.
And now they're going to the department store and paying $50 for a pair of pants with holes in the knees.
Yeah, there you go, man. So, you'd be surprised. Everything trending out there. But the whole key of all of this is to be prepared for any such emergency, every such emergency, and just to at least put it in your mind and get out there and walk around and spend some time knowing your own property or knowing your own neighborhoods or communities or whatever, and thinking about what if. Not to the extent that you get yourself so doggone paranoid that you're living underground in a bunker and everyone's out to get you, the kind of thing like that, but to the extent that, you know, you could try to live comfortably with a little bit of insurance in the back of your mind of some knowledge that, you know, you could help people out with. Knowledge is power, you know? And knowledge could very well be survival. If you're out there and you don't know what not to eat, grab up the wrong mushroom or vegetable, or not vegetable, but berry or something like that, and, man, things will go really bad real fast. You know?
If you're lucky, it'll just be you heading for the bathroom.
Yeah. If you're unlucky, it could be like you heading for the dirt. Anyway, there are all kinds of different things that could potentially happen. Maybe Steven said he has a face for radio. I do too, brother. Anyway, yeah, there are all kinds of things out there that could potentially happen. But the best case scenario is this, that you at least give yourself an edge on any potential danger, such as, you know, for example, we talked about, you know, not heading towards the city if things went awry, you know. Now, I always thought about this as well. You know, what if all heck broke loose and I'm out in the country where I live and my mom and my brothers are down in the city? What could I do? I'd have to maybe run a rescue mission to go down and get them.
Right.
But then I kind of think about this. The better plan for me to be would be, instead of trying to risk myself trying to get down there to get them, is to get them to plan ahead that if things started looking bad, that they would know.
Headed out.
Yeah, that they'd already be heading towards me. Because if I'm on my way down there to get them, and I get whacked, then, and they do manage to make it up out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, rendezvous point.
Yeah. So have yourself with your kids and your family a plan. Like, look, if everything goes to heck, you meet us over here by the old clock tower, you know, and we'll go over to Granny's house because she's got a bunker and shotguns. You know? It's just, there's a lot of things that people don't ever sit around and think about. You know, everybody's in their own little bubble right now. You can just walk over and turn the light switch on, and when you're thirsty, you can go over to the spigot and turn the water on. But what happens the day that stops? You know, what would you do? In the Mad Science Show, we talk about all kinds of different things, like permanent magnet motors, you know, that you can build generators out of to very least keep your lights on. And if you learn about battery banks and battery backups, then you could charge batteries up, have them on the shelves, and then if worst case scenario, you could keep a small mini fridge going, or, you know, a fan to keep cool or whatever. If you learn about things like how to make air conditioners, there's a way, if you plan ahead of time, you could take a 30-foot culvert pipe, bury it 6 feet under the ground, and put one end inside your house and the other outside with a screen so no critters can go get through there. And then what happens is when you suck that cool air or the hot air from the outside, it goes down inside this tube and cools down, and you got air conditioning. There's actually a castle up in Sedalia, Missouri that the guy built over the top of a cave, and that's how he uses it to cool down the entire castle. And you'd be surprised. It feels like they've really got air conditioning in there. I was in there in the middle of July when it's hotter than heck outside, and it was cool inside that castle. And he's on top of a hill. He's got a cave underneath the castle. The wind hits the side of the hill, blows up through there, blows the cool air right up through all the ductwork, all the way up to the top. And you know that the cool air falls, so the cool air would go on, work its way on back down towards the cave. And it worked. So there's a, it don't even, outside of maybe a fan or something like that, it don't take any, and his had that had absolutely no fan in it. It just used what, you know, the wind blowing, the gust of wind on the side of the hill to do all the work for it. And actually, you can get some sort of convection going on from the dip temperature difference in the inside as opposed to the outside. You know, the cool air and the hot, warm air mixing will actually create motion. So you don't even need a fan. But, you know, to get more volume, you'd want to try to put some sort of fan. And these, I don't know if you ever thought about them, but these little heater motors that are inside your vehicles out there, number one, they're 12 volt. Number two, they have a squirrel cage. And them squirrel cage fans, they'll draw a lot of air. You know, you can use those things right there to circulate a lot of air. And, you know, like I said, we're only talking 12 volts. So there's another potential use right there. You got an old junk car out there that won't work. But in that junk car, you have 12-volt light bulbs and sockets. And so you can make a 12-volt lighting system for your house, you know, emergency use. And, you know, there's ways you could hide it and decorate it and make it look like, you know, it's just part of the house. You know, so before your calamity happens, at least you have emergency backup lighting off of one old car battery. And a fan, you could have the fan off of the same car battery. Little solar panel out on top of your roof out there, you're charging that battery up, and worst case scenario, you got lights and a fan. And there are also ways that you could modify wood-burning stoves to put such as like copper tubing around the outside of the wood-burning stove, or, you know, wherever the heat comes on that deal, or even around the stovepipe itself. And circulate water through there, and then run that water through a radiator and then down into a tank for your hot water source, you know. And so you could use the heat rising off of the stove to turn a little fan that would circulate the hot air around your room. You could use the heat rising through the chimney or the stove pipe itself to heat your water, and at the same time you'd have all that, and basically charging up a 12-volt battery. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility. Is it going to give you the 100% comfort that you're used to right now of using all the inefficient appliances that we've got? No, it's not going to do all that. But something is better than nothing as far as I'm concerned. What do you think, man?
Totally agree, man.
So, basically, talking about planning for just such an emergency that anything happens. And, even if it wasn't, look on the worst case scenario. Nothing ever happens. Well, that'd be the best case scenario on one point. But let's say nothing ever happens. And now you got all this food stored up. And now you got all this alternative energy stuff. Well, use that alternative energy stuff to supplement your light bill. I mean, if you're running your lights off of batteries instead of the main power source, then you're saving fuel. And according to the extremist global warming freaks of the world, you're reducing your carbon footprint as well. So you can keep them happy. And the food, as far as the food, you're going to have to cycle it out every so often. It had an apocalypse come along, so, use up some of that food. Replace it with new food as you go. Or if you're laid off of work for a while, you at least got some food on the shelves until you get back to work. And that's the way it should be in every family. Every family should be taken care of like that. And, best case scenario is we had life pods for everybody that had emergency supplies in them. And if you think about how much money the governments actually spend on war machines, heck, they could have bought every single person in every single family a life pod that they could be prepared for a tornado or a flood or an earthquake. Depending on where your environment is, what you're most prone to, if you live on a fault zone or a flood zone or a tornado alley or a hurricane hill or something like that, you could actually make the doggone thing withstand all of that. It's not beyond the realms of, possibility. It can be done. I mean, they do it. And you think the government ain't got bunkers? And that doggone congressman or senator that you can't stand, are you going to live high on the hog? You probably be sitting down in that bunker eating caviar while you're outside trying to pillage for bugs or grass. Dandelions. So, and the funny thing about it is they all did that off of your tax dollars.
Yep.
You footed the bill. So, and while they're pointing the M16s at you while you're out on the other side of the fence and they're telling you there ain't no more room on the ark, you paid for that.
Yep.
Pretty dirty deal, man. Well, let's say we take a music break, get some coffee, and refresh our brains, and come back and hit her again. What do you think?
Yeah.
All right, everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We'll be back after a short music break. Peace and love. Stay tuned.
Can you remember?
table.
Okay, hello everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We're back. I got Honorable Knight Thomas Anderson with me, and we've been talking about survival kind of stuff, you know, being prepared for different scenarios, preparing for potential hazards is what we said. Anyway, you know, there's a lot of different things out there, safety devices that could be got ahead of time. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen or seen any of them in use or anything, but, you know, they actually got a blanket that if you get caught within a forest fire, that this thing could potentially save your life. And it's basically, you get underneath this kind of a foil-looking blanket and down as low to the ground as you can, probably down inside a ditch or something like that, and it's gives you a chance to live through a forest fire that's gone out of control. Firefighters are aware of them, so if you live in and near any wooded area, go talk to your local firefighter and ask them what they do whenever they're out firefighting if they accidentally get caught in the situation where there is no way for them to get out of the fire and they have to just ride it out. And so there is a potential to literally survive in that incident. And things that you wouldn't normally think about that you also might want to put in your bug out bag, would be something like the little paper filter masks that you see people carrying around. Now, are these as good as a gas mask? No, but they will keep small particulates. Like if you live near a volcano and you have an eruption out there, there's I think you call it silicone silicate, or is that what volcanic ash is?
You know, I'm not sure about the term, but I know that essentially it turns your lungs into a little concrete filled sacks.
Well, yeah, not only that, sorry, I had your volume now. You want to say that again?
No, I said it basically creates a concrete in your lungs.
Yeah, not only that, it also has, it's really sharp, so even if you don't get a lot in there, the little shards can actually cut your lungs up really bad.
Yeah.
And so if you have those paper masks, that's better than nothing. And if you don't, then, you know, you keep your shirt over your face or something, you know. But
wet shirt if possible.
Yeah. Something to reduce how much particles can actually get into your breathing system. And, you know, there are all kinds of gas masks out there. There's all kinds of military surplus stores where you can buy old gas masks. But if you do buy an old gas mask or something like that, at least make sure that you check the filters and all that and make sure that this thing is functioning.
Sure, you know how to use it, too.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you don't get them things seated up, you'll be sucking poison in through the side or something like that. Yep. You know? But there are things out there. I mean, like I say, you don't got to get totally paranoid to the extent where you go hide up underground and are afraid to live life. You should be living life, but you should be kind of like walking through life knowing that, you know, there is a potential for some knucklehead to come rolling through and do something stupid, or nature, you know, throws a fit and you're in the bad place at the wrong time.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, the Boy Scouts have a little deal. They say, be prepared, you know. So,
yep.
if you know, there's another good key right there, too, you know. Whatever you think about the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, you know, they do teach the kids some survival skills, stuff like that. If you don't like those particular organizations, then start up a little group for your own kids and call it whatever you want, you know. Survival scouts or whatever, and basically, you know, show them things.
Boy soldiers.
Yeah, how to make a fire, you know, with two sticks or, you know, survival camping kind of stuff. And, you know, things that you normally take for granted, like matches. You know, there's waterproof matches out there, and there's ways that you can take normal matches and waterproof those, you know. Go out and buy you one of those vacuum seal things that you put stuff in and basically seal you up some matches that, you know, until you open it up, then they're waterproof, you know?
Yep.
there's all kinds of different things out there. Just got to get out there and you got to look. You got to research it while you have the opportunity. And the knowledge that you
research
have...
Research it while the power's on, because when the power's out, the internet's not going to work.
Yeah. And so that, with that said, internet brings us to our next portion of the deal. We mentioned off air there was communications. Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas on communications?
Well, you should probably have some decent walkie-talkies at least.
Yeah.
So really nice ones, you know, for a pretty good, pretty cheap price, even in places like Walmart. So no excuse not to to have access.
Yeah.
Especially since you can use it for a tremendous amount of other things, too, that it'd be necessary for, too. So
the basic walkie-talkies, the little cheap old kid ones that they only got maybe several hundred feet range, but the good ones will have at least a quarter mile range. Some of them got them even farther than that.
Being 4 mile range, 5 mile range. Depends on your settings, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean your surroundings. Better the surroundings, the higher you are and the less interference from like trees and power lines and stuff like that, the longer the range it's going to give you. So,
and the old style CB radios, you know,
yep.
They're a dime a dozen nowadays, but it's at some point they're going to become so rare you can't even find them, you know. And mm-hmm. So if you stock up and get you a few mobile devices, CB radios, put one in your car and one in your wife's car, at least worst case scenario, if you're within a 5 mile range, you could talk to each other, and during certain times you could talk even farther than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that would be good. And there are handheld walkie talkies on the Citizens Band radio side, and then if you want to go out and you can get the FM ham radio license and do that. And during the apocalypse, I don't think the FCC is going to be running around telling you not to talk on a ham radio. You know, they're not going to haul you into court during that particular time. Now, you also got to understand that whenever you're talking on those things, that there are ways that people can triangulate your position with that signal. So...
Right, or just listen into the conversation that you're having.
Yeah, and you don't want to be on there jaw-jacking just for the fun of being jaw-jacking. You want to say a quick message, shut her down, and get your point across, and that's it. Because if you are in a situation hostile, you don't want people coming, finding you, being able to triangulate your position, because, you know, there's big gangs out there looking for people that got things. You know, hey, these guys got some radios. That means they must have some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll find out where you're at that way. So if you're going to communicate, don't communicate with smoke signals, because that just tells everybody right where you're at. Get you some cheap old walkie-talkies. And, use that kind of deal right there to only for emergency communications. If you have to be separated, everybody's got one. And extra batteries in them in case they get out there and it's been on too long and the battery goes dead. That's one thing that nobody, some folks don't even contemplate on. Those batteries will only last so long.
Yeah.
If you're out there in the middle of nowhere and you've had it on all day so that you can hear, you know, you could actually set up a plan to where, look, unless there's an emergency, I'm only going to turn my radio on at certain times. Since you're the base, you keep your radio on all the time because you got the solar power that keep it. And I will only turn mine on in case of emergency and so on and so forth, or at a certain given time, every hour on the beginning of the every hour, I'll turn it on and check in to see if everything's cool. If it is, I'll shut it back off and conserve my battery.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's something you should write down in your notebook and have in your plan. Because you never know. You know, and batteries are going to be pretty valuable in a situation like that.
Batteries and ways to charge them up.
Yeah. And there you go. Charging is another key. Rechargeable batteries, if you can get hold of any nickel cadmium or nickel hydride or lithium. Do they have rechargeable?
Lithium ion.
Yeah.
Lithium ion.
Yeah. So if you can get a hold of those now and you just save them back, because they only have so many times that you can charge those things.
Right.
And also some of these batteries will actually develop a memory if you charge them until, if you don't wait till it goes completely flat and then charge it again, you'll get to the point where it will only charge partially. It'll say it's fully charged, but it's not. And so that would be something that to factor in, and you know, drain them down until they won't work anymore, then put them on the charger and charge them back up and have your backup set so that you can use them while the other ones are charging.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there anything else in communication that you think about?
Probably should have code or something. In case you do have a hostile situation, so that you're not giving away information while they're listening either. Even if they can't triangulate you, if they know, if you're just like, yeah, I'm going down to the creek and down by such and such bend, because you want people to know where you're going, that you're working with, where you're going to be in case you get hurt or something. They know where to come and look for you. Now somebody else knows where you're at too.
Yeah, you could use, instead of saying, the bad guy's right around the corner, the fox is in the chicken house or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that way people would know what you're saying. You know, your people would know what you're saying. The other ones are just off-the-wall crazy stuff, you know? I spilled my Fruit Loops on my shoe or something like that, you know? It sounds crazy now, but in a situation like what you just mentioned, it would be something beneficial.
Right.
They don't know what you're talking about. They know you're talking, but they don't know what the heck you're saying. And if it's off the wall, then they can't figure out what it is if it's not even related to what it is that you're trying to say, whatever. It's going to be harder for them to decode what it is you're trying to say. Now, you can also learn some old Morse code. That's another, dots and dashes.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get enough power to actually transmit your voice, the static, the little dots and dashes,
might be what you need,
yeah. So, Muddy also said about, there was a way that people would take two identical reeds, and you could put one upstream and one downstream, and you could actually use the water to transmit sound waves up through the water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever been swimming in the swimming pool, you've been underwater, you can actually hear things around there. It's pretty cool.
Right, frequencies and all.
Yeah.
Do that.
But, best case scenario is if you get to stay at your home, but you need to make sure that your home is in a safe zone and that you have some sort of plan that everybody knows that if, worst case scenario, if this happens, the military, they do drills. And they do drills so that they'll be proficient in it, so that if anything happens, they don't even have to think about it. They just react. And so if you do the same thing at your house, and you get your family to the deal that, the smoke alarm goes off, everybody starts checking the house and seeing if anything's burning down, If it's blatantly obvious and the house is full of smoke and you can't figure out where it's coming from, then you have an exit port that you know. And so everybody's got a plan. Earthquake plan, tornado plan, fire plan, flood plan. It's something that, like you said there, Thomas, that you don't want to wait till it happens to try to develop a plan. You want to have something ahead of time.
Right.
Things that you normally don't take in consideration, or basically take for granted, matches and toilet paper,
Mm-hmm.
Kleenexes or some sort of rags or something like that, Yeah. I keep I use grease rags a lot because I'm working on tools and stuff. I keep a clean grease rag in my back pocket, and you'd be surprised how many times I've had to pull that clean grease rag out because I cut my hand and use that for compression until I got to the first aid cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And
look at other ways to deal with things like that too. Like people use super glue for sealing up cuts where normally you'd need stitches, stuff like that.
Yeah, and I've even seen people use electrical tape and duct tape for certain circumstances like that.
duct tape and maybe a little or electrical tape and a little bit of some sort of clean cloth or even just like, you know, some tissue. That way the glue on the back of the tape doesn't go sticking to the skin around the cut and end up tearing it more whenever you finally have to take it off. Use electrical tape. Be careful because that electrical tape will compress. Because when you pull it off the roll, it's stretching like a rubber band, and it doesn't just expand and then contract like a rubber band does. It takes a while to do what it does. And you could end up basically cutting a circulation off and end up basically without a finger.
Yeah. That's another thing, too. If you do have to use a tourniquet, you need to know that every so often you got to go in there and release pressure on that thing so that it don't destroy, you know, on the other side there. Cut that circulation off, and you got problems.
Yep.
And there's other things to factor in, too. When we talk about free energy or alternative energy sources like that, there's a whole lot to be learned in that. For example, I made a video out there called Redneck Hot Tub, and as crazy as that thing may sound, it's actually kind of brilliant. It takes 4 hours to heat the entire hot tub up, but once it gets to its temperature, if you don't turn that thing off, it'll get too doggone hot. That water will get so hot you just can't sit in it. And all it is doing is circulating water through the coffee pot element. And those coffee pot elements would be classified as small appliances. So if you have only just a small generator, you can literally use a coffee pot element to not only make your coffee, but to heat your water. And, you know, if you modified a coffee pot ahead of time and had like a couple valve systems to where you could, use that element, and whenever you want to make coffee, you just shut those valves off and make your coffee. None of the water that you'd be circulating through the element would actually make it up into the coffee pot. You know, as far as what you're going to drink, if you use them valves, you know. And if it's fresh water anyway, it's not going to matter. You wouldn't even have to. You just start making your coffee and you're heating water at the same time. But either way, those things will heat enough water to fill up your hot water tanks. I mean, I heated it. Go look at my video of the Redneck Hot Tub, and you'll see that's a pretty good size pool there. And it heats all that water. And, you know, it may take 4 hours to get up to full temperature where, you know, it's comfortable for you. I've been in that thing in the wintertime, man. That's how good that thing works. And when you get it up to temperature, it doesn't take much to maintain it. And so if you can run the equivalence of a coffee pot, you got all the hot water you need.
Right. You know,
most homes have like a 220, 40-gallon or 50-gallon more hot water heater, you know, or a gas hot water heater. And those things right there during the time when there's power outage or something like that or some sort of infrastructure going on, you're not going to be able to keep them hot. But if you got a little coffee pot and you can maintain that at least that much AC current going on, heck, you can still use that same hot water, just make a minor modification beforehand, and then that way if you ever need it, you just plug your doggone coffee pot right into your hot water tank and plug the little element into your generator, and you'll have hot water. When it heats up to temperature, unplug the coffee pot and plug the generator into your little mini fridge. You know, these things you have to plan about ahead of time.
Yeah.
But even in worst case scenario, if this did happen, you know, you could still, if you had the knowledge ahead of time, be able to modify it at the last minute if you had the hardware to do it. That's another thing. You won't be able to go to the hardware store. Throw some nails and some thumbtacks in your toolbox ahead of time. So we can make hot water. We know we can get the wood gas from burning gas, burning firewood. We know that we can get charcoal from burning firewood. We know that we can get hydrogen and oxygen from making a hydrogen cell, the electrolysis process, which is something as simple as a couple little plates of stainless steel inside of a deal and hooked up to a battery, and you can get even more high tech and get them to where they'll produce even more hydrogen. So in worst case scenarios, you always got a fuel source. You always got power if you got any kind of old appliances around, and heck, if you can't use your doggone ceiling fan anyway, turn that thing into a doggone generator. Got some magnets around your house and modify that doggone ceiling fan to be a generator. And if you're too lazy to get on the treadmill in there, most treadmills out there have a permanent magnet motor in them, and so you can take that permanent magnet motor and turn it into a generator. Now, washing machines, the newer washing machines have a direct drive or a smart drive stator motor in there. And the water pumps in there are already a built-in generator. Any old printers, Epson printers, have the old Bueller motor in there. It's a generator right out of the gate. And, of course, obviously, it's not going to run all your appliances. But if it keeps the lights on, it keeps the battery charged. Excuse me, I got to get a drink of coffee. If you got a battery that'll last 2 or 3, maybe 4 hours, depending on how much amperage draw you got going on. One battery will last 2 hours, two batteries will last 4 hours, three batteries will last 6 hours, and so on and so forth. So if you plan ahead and you build you a battery bank and you got some inverters and you got them in a safe spot, lights go out, just reach down here, turn the switch on, the lights come back on. No problem. And, you know, believe it or not, something as simple as the lights going off can seriously change the attitude of a lot of individuals in your own house.
Yep.
My family, my wife likes to be cool, you know, and so I have to figure out some sort of air conditioning. Because when my wife gets hot and sweaty, she gets cranky. And when she gets cranky, ain't nobody in the house happy. So, hell hath no fury like a woman sweating. Anyway, Anon 1024 in the chat room there put in, just use a Slaric cider for lights. And that's true. A Slaric cider circuit is a simple circuit with a TIP 42 transistor, TIP 42C transistor, resistor, and a couple diodes and coils of wire, the primary and the secondary, and you can light up old fluorescent bulbs that wouldn't light up in the standard deal. And if you got an old Beckett oil burner igniter, 20 kilovolts of oil burner igniter run off a 12 volt battery will light up as many doggone fluorescent bulbs as you can run in series clear across your yard and plug it down in the dirt on the other side for the ground, and you got all the lighting you want. Just make sure you tell all your family not to go over there and stick their finger on it while while the lights are on. Because it'll light them up, because it's still got more power to go. Old lawnmower magnetrons, you know, your riding lawnmower goes bad. Check this out. You take that old riding lawnmower, it has a stator in there to charge your battery back up if it's electric start. If you blew a hole in the side of that motor, then a rod flew out the side of that motor, and all the oil gushed out, and that thing will still turn. Throw a prop on that thing and hang it up on a pole somewhere, and now you got an already built generator. You just turned an old junky motor that was completely worthless into a 12-volt generating system. Because it's still got the bearings in it, it's still got the camshaft, and, you know, do a little bit more modifications and use that cam action inside there to actually push a rod that goes down into a well that pumps your water up. You see that? Taking junk that you would normally take for granted or throw off in the dump to repurpose it into something else. I posted a link in a video of a video last night that I saw over there on YouTube. It's a little static motor that's made out of a plastic bottle. Let me scroll up there and see if I can find the link in the chat room. But basically, it shows you how to make a little static motor out of a plastic soda bottle. and some soda cans. A little bit of aluminum foil, and you got a static discharge going on. So you could take that same exact system and make you a bunch of little windmills out there in your yard, kind of like little sunflower windmills, or if you got an old box fan that doesn't work anymore, use the blades off of that and build you a windmill that is a static windmill. And that static discharge will shoot over to a capacitor bank that will in turn shoot over to another one and use that static discharge to light all your fluorescent bulbs with. And as long as the wind's blowing outside, you'll get a flicker of light. And if it's blowing good enough and you got enough of these things laying around, you'll have constant light. Because the gas inside the fluorescent bulbs, all it needs is a high frequency, high voltage to energize that gas and give you visible light. So you could build out of trash a static generator. And out of junk, you could build a generator. Those are things to think about beforehand so that you know you have the knowledge and put it on your iPad or your iPod or your phone or whatever and have the little video down there, little how-to videos, because out there on YouTube, the information, you can download these videos, you know, and save them up. Put them on CD-ROM, put them on thumb drives, put them on your hard drive, print out what you can print out. Have something ready at all times. The Slayer Exciter that somebody mentioned in there, there's a link on the... I can't even say it now. Go to the Mad Science Podcast page on ShazizRadio.com. And there is a diagram. I'll throw that link up in there. Got to get there first. Clicked on the wrong doggone deal. Anyway, I'll throw that link up in there, and there's an actual picture that shows you the Slayer Exciter circuit. It's simple as all get out. The only thing I think I didn't specify in there was the actual coils, how many windings, and all that kind of stuff, but You got the basic circuit, then you can figure out the coils of wires. So let me get over there. It's on the Mad Science Podcast page. There's an actual picture of the Slayer Exciter circuit. And that is wireless energy there, depending on how much voltage you put to it. The one that I usually use is just not more than a 9-volt battery. And little coils. And you can light up light bulbs, fluorescent light bulbs with it. You know, is that going to be good enough for your lighting system? It could be if you expand on the idea. There we go. Right there. All right, I'm going to post this link into the chat room over at ShazizRadio.com. Share it with your friends. It's a really simple circuit. And if you need any help, there's plenty of people out here that are willing to help you out. Ryan Abrams, he's, in my mind, mastered the Slayer Exciter. He does a lot of cool stuff with that thing, man. Him and Terry Woodruff and some of the other guys out there that are using Slayer Exciters.
Mm-hmm.
And on your barbecue grill, if you got a electric igniter on there, those things right there, I did a video here recently called Lightning Motor. It has one of them electric igniters. You could use that electric igniter for your high voltage source. And a little ion generator, they have, you can buy them on eBay for a few bucks on eBay. You can buy a little 12 volt ion generator. Negative ion generator, and that's also a power source. And you'd be surprised how much you can get out of one of those little negative ion generators. I was pretty amazed myself. And if you learn about capacitors and how to use these things in conjunction with each other and a spark gap, then you'll have plenty of power for, at the very least, lighting. So we've covered a lot of stuff here, Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of anything else that we hadn't covered? We water filtration. There's a lot of homemade water filtration systems that you can make.
Well, that's why I said talk, having a look, and maybe if you get a chance, having a discussion with Robert Murray Smith about things like that. He's touched on that on a number of his videos. So ways that you can basically, he's got ways that you can basically turn sugar into a graphene-like coating on sand, you know, making carbon foam. So you can't get much more activated than a foam. So
yeah, and there's a lot of materials out there that could be used for basic filtration to start. You know, some sort of tightly wound cotton materials. I mean, something.
Anything? Yeah, he shows like a multi-stage unit that, like the last stage, is that sand that's coated in the graphene. And I kind of put a bug in his ear. Why not start with silica gel instead of sand?
Yeah.
You know, you start with basically, you were talking about cracking water to get hydrogen for energy. Like to burn things and stuff like that. That's like one of the cleanest fuel sources for like cutting steel and stuff like that, and welding and whatnot. So, but if you don't use something that's alkaline, stainless is not probably the best bet for those plating, that plate. If you've got time to get things together now, you really want to build your plates out of something like magnesium, and then you dope your water to get conductivity across it, because plain water with nothing in it is kind of hard to get electricity to cross it, and it's very, very, it'll make a very, very poor electrolyzer for cracking water.
Yeah, you could use soda water for that, carbonated water.
Well, you can use that, but your best solution would be to just get some number 6 line cleaner. It's basically just sodium hydroxide.
Yeah.
You drop a little bit of that in that that water, and let it dissolve in that water, and it won't dissolve the magnesium, because magnesium and sodium are both alkaline. So they're both wanting to do the same thing with their electron shells, and that makes them kind of repel away from each other. But that will give you the conductivity in your solution, and it won't crack the sodium and cause it to, like, evaporate off. A lot of people I see doing this, they don't know enough about the chemistry, so they're putting, like, table salt in there and trying to use that. And then they wonder why the water's all turning black, and it's because they just broke the salt into chlorine gas and sodium hydroxide. And if they're using stainless, there's a multitude of metals that they have mixed into that alloy to make that stainless at the fabrication shop facility at the foundry. And some of that stuff is alkaline, and some of it's an acidic-based compound. So they both react to the two compounds that you just made out of salt. And that sodium and the carbon, or chlorine, are the two strongest ones. One is the strongest base, the other one's the strongest acid. So they're both under an electron pressure attacking your metal plates and dissolving them, and turning them into a salt of some sort.
Cool.
Turning the acidic metals are turning into a compounded compound, and the other ones are turning into a chlorine compound. So you're getting iron chloride or chromium chloride or God knows what in your solution while you're trying to make your hydrogen. You use the sodium hydroxide, all you're going to get is basically that sodium ion is going to be knocking around while the hydrogen and the oxygen are going to the two different plates to make your hydrogen and oxygen.
Cool.
So,
well, that sounds pretty high tech. People need to study that up ahead of time, but there you go. There's a possibility there. And there's another little simple idea that I don't know how many people's ever thought about. You ever got out there into your car in the middle of summertime and all the windows are up in the car and it seems like a furnace inside there?
Mm-hmm.
There's a potential energy source / heat source right there.
Yep.
Even in the wintertime, when the sun's out, that car is going to, if all the windows are up in that car is going to warm up inside.
Yep.
But you know, during the summertime, if you want to talk about making a solar dehydrator, throw some racks up in the back seat whenever you got the windows closed up in there, and it won't take long to dehydrate that food. But if you take that heat that's coming up out of there, you can use that heat source, because in some instance, what's the highest you've ever heard that a car got hot inside?
I don't know about the temperatures, but you have to be extraordinarily careful in town leaving a dog or a child in a car, because if you don't, you're either going to end up in jail for animal cruelty or child abuse, or you're going to end up with a busted window because somebody saw that and busted your window out and let the animal or the child out.
Yeah, it's a tot in there. It'll get up in
there. Yeah. Not even cracking the window. It's not good enough. You do not leave them in the car.
Way over 100 degrees inside that car. Could be up to 200 degrees or more. It just depends on how hot.
Yeah, especially if you... I mean, it does that in light-colored cars, so you can imagine if you've got, like, a dark red or a black car.
Yeah. And so if you got a car you can't drive anyway, make you some sort of modification, such as maybe take the back seat out and drill a hole in the trunk and use a vent to bring that heat up out of there.
I have seen people use cinder blocks, some wood struts, a staple gun, and plastic sheeting to make dehydrators.
Yeah.
And some screens for to lay the stuff on. That way it evaporates all the way around. It's the air is able to get to whatever it is you're trying to dry out all the way around that thing. So
what do you think about taking that car and not only using it to potentially run a version of a Stirling engine to literally make you a generator, a dehydrator, and potentially a heat exchanger that you can actually change it into cool air, like a heat pump?
I don't know if you could do the Stirling thing with the car itself, but if it's still got a radiator, you can do what I told you yesterday. For the autoclave system, instead of the steel pipe, you just go ahead and use the radiator as your spray-on compound, item, and take the matte black flame-proof, or a barbecue. You can go to Ace Hardware and look for barbecue spray paint. It's meant for spray painting on a barbecue, so it'll withstand like up to 1,200 degrees.
Yeah,
more than enough temperature for any fluid. Any water that you have inside of that, even if it's saturated with salt or completely ionized water, whatever, it doesn't matter, to boil it off before that it'll long since boil off before you reach the temperature that's going to hurt that paint. And it comes in a matte black, which means that it's going to absorb the maximum potential of that sunlight and convert it into heat.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, there's ways that you can go a step further if you really want to get your hands dirty and make something useful. Any metal tubing, you can slide a magnet through that thing and run powdered iron over the surface of it, and it'll form these little spikes where the magnet's at.
Yeah.
Hit that with that spray paint. And then move the magnet and pour some more iron, hit it with the spray paint. So now you have a wedge shape that's matte black sticking up off the surface of that with a whole bunch of them all around. So any light that doesn't get absorbed that's reflected off of it, because there is a small amount that's reflected, will be reflected into another spike several times before it has a chance to escape. So you're looking at not getting, say, 80 or 85 or 87% of that sunlight converted into heat. You're looking at like 99.993% of that sunlight all turning into heat.
Here's one for you. Take an old car tire and a bunch of copper tubing or some rubber hose. If the car tire is no good, you can't use it anymore, won't hold air, drill a hole in a couple holes in that thing, coil your tubing up inside this thing, and poke it out the tire there and hook a little pump to it to circulate water through that thing, and put a pane of glass over the top of that car tire and see how hot that water gets.
That's not a bad idea.
When that doggone tire heats up, I don't know if you've ever sat down in a tire in the back of a pickup truck in the middle of summer But it'll burn your biscuits. I've done it a few times. Got my shorts on. It's cold. Yeah, I mean, it's light. The sun's done went down. I jump in the back seat, and the dang tire's been heated up all day long. And
still hot.
Yeah, still hot.
The older it is, the more that surface of that tire is going to decompose, which means it's not going to be shiny and smooth to reflect that light.
Yeah.
It's going to be really rough, and it'll have little micro crevices that will absorb that light up. So.
Well, there's uses right there for things that you wouldn't normally think about. You know, an old car tire with some coiled up hose or wire or copper tubing up inside there is a heat source. And heck, man, if you got a whole field of old car tires, man, you got a lot of heat.
Mm-hmm.
I think I need to do a video about that. Redneck heat source. What do you think?
Maybe you should turn that into like a water pump system.
Yeah.
That way, when it gets hot, you just basically you can show them how a check valve works too.
Oh, yeah, and there would be another good thing, too, because if you had this tire sealed up and you used a Venturi effect, you could actually use the heat coming out of that tire to start siphoning water.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I said. If you use a check valve, too, though, it doesn't matter. You could literally have that spray up into the air and land in a pond or something that the other end is in.
Yep.
And it'll actually heat and push it out. And when it pushes out, it'll push against the check valve, trying to go back down into the pond through the bottom route, and it'll close that up. That way, the rest of the pressure can only go one way, and it'll fly out the top and go dropping into the, into that little pond. So, for nothing else, I mean, it's basically a free way to basically make something that, you know, looks interesting and might even act as a little bit of a cooling element during the summer, because that sprayed water, no matter how hot it is, to make it fly out of there, is still continuing to evaporate, and you're going to get evaporative cooling in the area.
Yeah.
And a couple of those set up near a pond or something like that, and that'd probably drop like the temperature within like a 50 to 100 yard radius at least 2 or 3 degrees.
Yep. And back on that car tire thing there for a second, if you could get a hold of some black sand or something like that, you know, and once you got your tubing all up in that tire, and basically fill the bottom inside of that with some of that black sand, that also will retain heat, you know?
Just be careful not to plan on making a trip to Hawaii to pick that black sand up, because that's protected.
Yeah, and I understand that it's like some sort of curse. If you grab a rock off of the volcano over there, you get Pele's curse. It's funny because I saw a documentary where people were shipping their rocks back to Hawaii.
Yeah. Man.
I don't know if it was a placebo effect or if it was real, but they've sent them back.
Right.
Doggone tourists, they aren't going to take a rock from wherever they go.
Yeah. So.
So if everybody picked a rock up from everybody else's direction and everybody all ran to the other side of the world, would the world tilt? Okay.
people are, when it comes to the planet itself, people are pretty insignificant.
Yeah, that's what I think.
People keep thinking they're going to make some major change, and the fact is, you're not.
Yeah.
Not if you get everyone you know on the planet to jump in on it. It's not going to make that much of an effect. Any of the things that we can affect, what we consider significant change, it's only significant to humankind. Planet itself will shrug us off and keep right on going.
Shake us off like a bad set of fleas, brother. Stephen Gibbons posted a video link inside the chat room of ShazizRadio.com that says oil drum with hose pipe wrapped around it, then buried in a compost pile will heat water enough for showers. So there you go, folks. take turning junk into heat, man. Mm-hmm. And in your compost pile...
God, I just hope that there's no leak in that thing. You end up with compost in your shower water.
Oh, yeah, that would stink. Oh, literally. Pardon the pun. Yeah, but either way, it's necessity is the mother of invention. And if you could think about these things ahead of time, I'm sure everybody's got an old car tire laying around. And surely you got an old screen door that has a pane of glass in it. There's a not only you could use it as a solar dehydrator, but also a doggone a water heater at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm talking multiple uses here.
And a few mirrors and whatnot, and you can actually make a solar cooker too.
Yeah.
Even just some aluminum foil and some cut up cardboard. You can literally make yourself a little parabolic dish that you can use the sun to cook something and reach the temperatures that you need to make that food safe to eat.
And if you got a big screen TV outside, you could build a Fresno lens out of the screen inside there. One of the older style ones. There's so much out there that you could repurpose.
They're still using those, and even the fairly new ones, like the DLP rear projection TVs, still use those. They're called a spherical Fresnel lens. So
cool.
Got a stack up here. Sent Muddy with a few of them home.
In the old TVs, they got huge lenses on the old style projections where there's three separate colors in there. There are big magnifying glasses in there that mm-hmm. could be salvaged out. Not to mention the copper wire and the the transformers inside here. What are they called? Doggone it. I hate it when that happens.
You mean the flyback transformers?
Yeah, flyback transformers. There you go.
Actually, there's a fluid in between the lowest lens in those projectors that you mentioned there that has got to have some pretty valuable use, too, because it's, like, ultra-clear, and it's a very high-temperature oil.
Cool.
So it's used for convecting the heat off of that. I mean, you think about it. You put your hand on your TV set.
It's warm.
You feel how warm that tube has gotten? That tube is only making as much light for you to see as the size of the screen. Multiply that. I mean, you take that screen and just like place it in each section until you cover the whole screen that one of those video projectors covers, and that's how much more heat is being generated by those three tiny little lamps. That are those little CRTs that are, you know, they're only like maybe 4 or 5 inches. They're not a big, you know, like a 19-inch TV or something like that. They're just a little tiny thing. So they're pumping out tremendous amounts of heat, and that stuff is made to handle that.
Yeah.
And not, you know, blow anything out from overexpansion. So, I mean, I've got a few of those I've hung on to specifically for that purpose because I don't have anything to put the oil in yet. But one of these days I'm going to get that out and do a little tinkering around and see what that stuff is good for.
Yeah, there ought to be some use. One of the things I would think it would be good for, since it is clear, is refracted light, you know. Believe it or not.
Yeah, you can make a lens out of it, put it in between two thin sheets of something that you can stretch just a little bit by pumping some pressure in it and make a convex lens out of it.
Yeah, and you could also, believe it or not, you could learn something from fiber optics, and you can pipe light in around corners, and you could go in a complete circle and literally pipe light from the sun outside to your basement. It uses refraction, you know.
You can just set up a couple mirrors and bounce that light around, too.
Yeah, there's another possibility if you're into that home interior stuff.
I was going to say, that's how they did all the artwork and whatnot inside those pyramids, was they bounced light down inside of it with those little flat sheets of gold that they basically hammered out.
Well, there you go. And if you got a whole bunch of gold, you could make you a Fresnel lens out of that, too.
Well, I'm thinking just use some aluminum foil, because, you know, they didn't have aluminum foil.
Well, that would be the cheaper method. I was just trying to, like, you know, throw in there, you know, hey.
I was going to say, is there a song in that? Light your house like an Egyptian?
Yeah, it could be. We could write it. We could copyright
it. Better than walking like an Egyptian, right?
Yeah. we could trademark it or something. Anyway, there it's unlimited, the things that you can repurpose out there. You know, energy out of trash. These guys over in Europe took plastic bottles and made petrol out of it. You can get static energy using the plastic bottles. You got a place to store your water. And if you got glass bottles, why not save them anyway? You could make capacitors out of glass bottles, or you could use them for water storage, or build you a solar heater. Or there's so many different potential repurposing of all kinds of stuff. Old microwave ovens have copper wire in them. They have magnets in them. You know, the transformers themselves, you could modify a Slayer exciter circuit to run some of that, or, you know, there's it just unlimited. If you, you're only limited to your creativity and what you've researched ahead of time. But there's other things out there that you could use that are already made that would do certain things for you, you know. How many people would you think about how to pump water if you ain't got no doggone electricity or nothing? You know, there's methods of you can pump water with heat. You can pump water with steam. You can pump water. There's all kinds of old style pumps. Go back, look at some of the videos how they used to do it in the old days. You know, and the old siphon hoses that they used to have the little ball on there. You sit there and you squeeze the little ball. It creates the suction and sucks the water up out of there. So there's all kinds of methods. So anyway, it looks like we're getting down to the wire there, Thomas. Think of, is there anything we missed?
Nothing I can think of.
And go ahead.
Shut it down at 11 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay. I never kept track of, you know, when things shut down, since everybody else, there was always somebody else saying, okay, that's it.
Yeah, it's a three-hour show. We've been at it for a while.
That's good.
And in case those giant bees that are from Asia or whatever show up in your neighborhood, you're going to need a shotgun or, you know, an industrial-strength bug zapper fly swatter or something. A suit of armor made out of a 50-gallon steel drum and some stovepipe. Dang, man. That's a worst-case scenario. Ain't doggone bees like that come after you. I think I'd rather deal with a hurricane and the earthquake than be chased down by a swarm of those dang things.
Jeez.
One poke in the old behind with one of those and you're gonna be dancing. If you didn't know how to dance before, you'd be doing the boot scoot or the break dance.
Actually, from what I understand too, without medication, most people die from it. Yeah. Those who don't die from it wish they had.
Jeez.
So.
Well, anyway, knowing the hazards ahead of time, keeping your eyes out, ears, your nose, your nose going, smelling for things that don't smell right, or sounds, or, you know, whatever, you know, just kind of being on alert, because you never know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, and the worst time things happen is when you're surprised about it. You know, if you got some sort of, you kind of stay alert and you kind of stay prepared for certain emergencies, then you're going to be better off. And your best case scenario is that you get in contact with all your local neighbors and friends and all that, and get together, start a club, a survival club or something like that, you know, or if not necessarily a survival club, a resource club, a network, something that you guys can get together, you know, maybe once a week or once a month, and talk about, you know, worst case scenarios, what would we do? And don't let it turn into an apocalyptic argument over what is and what ain't going to happen, tinfoil hat kind of deal there. Just use it for wisdom and say, look, you know, I got to thinking about this because there's a lot of stuff going on in the world. What would we as a community be able to do in a worst case scenario? I know we got contingency plans as far as governmental wise, but what about we the people wise? You know, because the government only plans for the government. They don't necessarily plan for you. I mean, they might have a storage facility for you in case you get out of line or something like that. But are they looking out for your best interest? Are they going to come around and steal your resources from you? Or whatever, is your community going to stand side by side with you in a worst case scenario and help take care of you? These are the questions that you need to ask before it happens. So you got anything out there, Thomas?
No, I'm not really with it. I mean, you poke me with an idea, it'll tend to wake the brain up, but spitting out something on its own, it's kind of taking a I'm taking a break on that.
Yeah, well, we're down to the last few minutes of the show, so, you know, if you got any last minute ideas or you want to throw out your YouTube channel there or something else, then that'd be the time to do that.
No, I don't really even do that anymore. You remember I didn't really do it a whole lot before either. So.
Yeah. All right, well, folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. I hope that something we said sparked a little bit of interest and benefit you. There's all kinds of knowledge out there, and if you got knowledge to share with people, we would appreciate you joining in on the Knights of the Round Table and bringing that knowledge to the table to help benefit other people.
Now, there's a wiki on energy-related stuff over on revolution-green.com, too, if people want to go over and head over there and hit that up. The guy that runs that site has been hammering away on that pretty hard, losing probably quite a bit of sleep trying to get that thing fully set up, so there's, you know, some good information in there. And it's set up, I think, where people can start contributing now, too. So if they've got something they want to share around to other people that are coming in there and, you know, reading up on stuff, they can do it.
Yeah, and
so,
if you need a link to that website, there are links on the Shazizz Radio. I know there's at least a link. They was trying to build a fund for a 3D printer. There's a link on there, or just go to revolutiongreen.com, mm-hmm. and I'll check the website later and see if I do have a direct link and work that out as well. Anyway, that's about it, guys and gals. I hope you enjoyed the Knights of the Round Table. And Thomas, thanks again. Once again, you're a vast amount of knowledge, even though we're both tired because we kind of put a lot of hours into what we do. And, you know, it's something else. That's why we need other people. We need other Knights of the Round Table and honorary knights like Stephen Gibbons out there in the chat room piping in comments and links and information to help each other out.
It's all about networking.
Yep. Wake Radio 1800 online, People to People, Scotty Sovereigns. There's so many different networks out there. Like I said, I got to get a list because I go through this every time I try to list off everybody. I want to give everybody credit for their deal. I want everybody to know there's other networks. You don't have to listen to us. You could always go underneath the Awake Radio chat room that's on the Super, if you go to ShazizzRadio.com, superchat.html, there are two chat rooms in there. One for the Shazizz Radio Network, one for the Awake Radio Network. And Awake Radio is in UK, they're in Australia, they're in America, they're all over the place. And so if you go to the ShazizzRadio.com/superchat.html, right underneath the Awake Radio deal, there's a Facebook share button for one, and there's also a click here for other radio stations button. And you can click there, and there's other radio networks that you can listen in to see what they're talking about. And sometimes the Awake Radio has different programming than Shazizz Radio, so they might be talking about something that ain't the same as what we're talking about at the time. But there's multiple networks and information going on 24/7, so it's there for you. With that said, I'm shooting over my time again because I've been running my mouth. So, Thomas, thanks again. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Pass this podcast around in hopes that it'll benefit somebody else. Take care, everybody.
Woman, man, what knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet!
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet! I order you to be quiet!
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot! Camelot! Camelot!
It's only a model.
Shh! Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routine to call the scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Shazam the Terrible! All rise for King Shazam the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table!